Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. So on April 5th, I came into work. I did a full kind of recap of Easter weekend, talked all about how it was such a blessing. It was a beautiful time. I am a huge faith-based person, as many of my listeners know. But then I got this really interesting message from one of our listeners who said, I love the fact that you're so open about being religious. However, do you know that Eastern Orthodox Christians observe Easter on May 2nd? I said, no, I had no idea. I had no idea about that. And immediately I wanted to talk about this. I wanted to learn more about it and share it with all of you on the air as well. So joining us this morning is Father Patrick Burns, who's the priest at Three Saints Orthodox Church in Ansonia. Father Burns, thank you for coming on the show this morning. How are you?
Thank God. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'm really excited to learn more about this. First of all, I guess the most immediate question, why, Father, do we have two different Easters? Like, why is it some Christians view it on April 4th, let's just say, of this year, but then others, the Orthodox Christians, they view it on May 2nd? Why is that?
So for all Christians, Easter is on a different date. It's based, of course, on a lunar cycle, which was originally based off of the ancient Hebrew calendar. And so the difference really is between East and West, if we could say. And the ancient calendar of the day, or back in the day, was what was called the Julian calendar, and that was created first by Julius Caesar. And then they noticed after time that there were some kind of mathematical inadequacies in it, that every year there were 11 minutes difference. And that might not seem like a whole lot to begin with, but over a couple thousand years, that certainly adds up. So Pope Gregory, who is the head of the Roman Catholic Church at the time, he said, "Oh, we've got to fix this." So they created what's called the Gregorian calendar, named after him. So almost all of the modern world uses what's known as the Gregorian calendar. In the Orthodox Church, we base our dates off of the ancient calendar, the Julian calendar, and so this is why you hear people say things like Orthodox Easter, or they'll say even Russian Christmas. Right now, there's 13 days difference in time, so those 11 minutes have now added up to 13 days.
Wow!
And so that's exactly.
Father. So does that mean like you don't celebrate Christmas on the 25th of December? You celebrate it more like January?
So this is kind of, if we can say, the original Orthodox calendar.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, there's some Orthodox Christians who have adopted what's called the new calendar, and that's the Gregorian calendar.
Gotcha.
But for those who celebrated on what we would call January 7th, to them, it's still December 25th.
Gotcha.
Just a matter of looking at, well, what number are we in, and what month, what calendar are we observing at the time.
So interesting. Now, do you guys celebrate it the exact same way? It's just, it's different on the calendar. Like, does your Easter, it's the same thing. You still have, like, Good Friday, and then you have Sunday as like when Jesus resurrected, like that's all the same. It's just a different day.
Yes, precisely. This Sunday for us is Palm Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we're gearing up for that. It's of course a joyful day. And then we begin Holy Week next week for us, leading up to what we don't call it Easter in the Orthodox Church. We call it Pascha.
Pascha.
Pascha is a kind of an evolved pronunciation of the Hebrew word Pesach, which is Passover. And so for us, and what really for all Christians, Jesus Christ is the Paschal Lamb. He is the one whose blood was shed so that the consequences of sin may pass over us.
Correct.
So yeah. All of this lines up perfectly in our theology and our terminology and even as we're discussing with the calendar. Everything comes together perfectly for this.
Yeah. Now, Father Burns, I'm just curious, like, is there going to be, you know, because you were saying over time, it kind of grows more and more on the calendar, like changing. I mean, is there going to be, this probably sounds insane, and you could totally correct me if I'm wrong, but like, is there going to be a time where you've got, let's just say the Western Christians celebrating Easter on the first weekend of April, let's just say, like, is there going to be a time where, you know, the Eastern Orthodox Christians, are they going to be celebrating it like in June or July? Like, does that sound crazy, or is, because it kind of adds up a little bit every time, it changes on the calendar?
Well, that's certainly a possibility, but that would be several hundred years into the future.
Okay, cool. okay.
But, you know, I think the thought is that perhaps sometime, you know, the church officials or the powers that would be would say, okay, let's kind of rethink this. That's not for me to say. I'm just a lowly priest.
Stop it. You're
is
very
here
important.
In the valley. And, well, may God bless it. But no, we'll see what the future holds. But theoretically, that's where things will end up.
Interesting.
But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, Father Burns, before I let you go, I was curious, would you mind, not to put you on the spot, would you mind sharing like a hymn that will be going on in your parish to celebrate or commemorate Easter? Would you mind?
I would love to do that. You know, we sing, it's called the Paschal Troparion. It's this very simple phrase. It's this: Christ is risen from the dead, trampling down death by death, and upon those in the tombs bestowing life. And during Paschal Tide, which is the full 40 days after, during Pascha, we should say, we greet each other with the words, Christ is risen, and then the response is, indeed he is risen. We don't say, good morning, hi, how are you? We say, Christ is risen, indeed he is risen.
Yeah.
And with what joy we say those words, so even with more joy, we involve our singing. So I'd be very glad. Well, I can do it. How about I could do English, Greek, and Russian? You tell me what would you like?
Well, you've got, unfortunately, about 30 seconds. So whichever one you think would be wonderful.
All right. I'll start with English, okay?
Yes.
Christ is risen from the dead, trampling down death by death, and upon those in the tombs bestowing life. Christos voskreshe iz smertvih, smertiyu smert poprav, Isushim bogrove zhivotoruvav. And I apologize to our Greek listeners, but I think, as you said, we've run out of time.
That was beautiful. Father Burns, thank you so much. And please, please enjoy this holiday week coming up. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning. I really do. Thank you.
Absolutely, Melissa. It was my joy, and God bless you and your ministry here on the airwaves, and God bless all of your listeners today.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Blumenthal. This morning, we obviously are going to be talking about some of the biggest developments in news this week, the verdict on former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin in the death of George Floyd. I know your comments kind of stood out to me because while it is a very, very small victory, this is accountability, not justice. I think that those words rang true. And I know that you've been a big proponent in signing the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. But I wanted to kind of talk about it a little bit this morning because I know this is still very controversial. So do you mind kind of diving into that this morning?
Sure. Let's keep in mind that the verdict was really historic because it involved testimony by the police themselves holding accountable one of their own. And I think that is one of the results in this case that has been sometimes overlooked. But my point was that it is a measure of accountability. Justice would be having George Floyd alive right now.
Right.
So full justice cannot be achieved in a court. There are limitations to what a court can achieve, but there is a measure of accountability here.
Now, I know you and many other lawmakers have called on Congress to act more, including President Biden, who has said we need to do more. And that's where this bill comes into play. So I think overall, kind of like Connecticut, first of all, is this very similar to what Connecticut now has in place with the reform bill?
That's absolutely right, Melissa. As a matter of fact, in my own view of what the federal government should do, I'm looking to Connecticut as a model, just as I have done on gun violence prevention. Connecticut has approached it in a very sensible way. Our law is not perfect, and the legislature may choose to revise it in a number of ways after hearing from police and other constituencies, but it provides a good starting point.
So there are a few things, Senator Blumenthal, that make a lot of sense in this bill, very similar to what our reform law looks like. Totally cool with the no-knock warrants going away. Definitely, obviously, prohibiting, I can't even believe we have to put this into law, but prohibiting racial, religious, discriminatory profiling by law enforcement, absolutely. But there are a couple of things that even have been in question, even to this day, even though we passed a law here, that's still a problem. The biggest one being ending qualified immunity. First of all, if we were to end qualified immunity for law enforcement officers, does that mean we're going to get rid of qualified immunity altogether? What I mean by that is it actually applies to, as you know, all government workers. I don't know if everybody knows that. This is for local, state, federal. You're talking about mayors, governors, medical board inspectors, prison guards, school administrators, IRS agents. I could go on and on. They all get qualified immunity, but we're only taking it away from cops. So if we were to end it, does everyone lose qualified immunity or just police?
The bill in the United States Congress is focused on police. But remember that this qualified immunity can take very different forms. And we have not finalized, and I should emphasize, that we are still discussing and debating what qualified immunity there should be. Now, as a practical matter, as you may know, police departments ensure their officers, so that at the end of the day, very often, frequently, maybe almost always, it's the municipality or the police department that pay for the insurance that in turn is the source of any civil payment in a lawsuit against the police. And that's another important point. This change in the law would apply to civil cases, not the kind of criminal case that was brought against Chauvin in Minneapolis.
But doesn't qualified immunity only apply to civil cases anyways? Isn't that how it is on the book right now?
Well, you know, you could have immunity to criminal cases as well. But this whole issue of qualified immunity is one where, as I emphasize, there's still a lot of debate going on. And in fact, Senator Scott, the Republican from South Carolina, and Senator Booker of New Jersey are the two who are leading this debate in the Senate. There's a House bill that has come to us, but there are a lot of discussions going on. And they will probably work through the Judiciary Committee where I sit, but so far there's been no decision.
Senator Blumenthal, I know just after signing the reform bill here in Connecticut, we are slowly but surely, and there's proof in many departments across Connecticut, we're finding officers leaving. They're either retiring earlier than they thought, or they are leaving the state altogether and they're going to other departments in other states. A lot of that, from the officers I have spoken to directly, it's because of the police reform bill. They feel like they're not trusted. They feel like when people say defund the police, even though it's not saying we're not going to take the police away, it's saying we're not going to invest in your equipment. We're not going to invest in your training. We're not going to invest in you guys and gals. We're going to put it back into communities. Do you fear if we do something similar here in Connecticut to the entire nation that we're going to lose quality officers?
You know, Melissa, I worked as United States Attorney for 4.5 years with law enforcement, local police, and federal. And then as Attorney General for 20 years, I worked with our state and local police, again, federal. I was not doing criminal enforcement, but civil, but I, in fact, represented the state police when they were sued. And my impression is, I could be wrong, but the overwhelming majority, in fact, I could count probably on one hand in 30 or 40 years, the number of police officers who really were less than the standard that we would expect.
I agree.
I want to emphasize that point. I want to emphasize that point because I think respect for the police is very important. And I'd also like to emphasize, by the way, that I oppose defunding the police. In fact, I think police need more resources, especially when they go into difficult domestic violence situations where counselors and folks who know about intervention with interviewing and psychological skills, they often are asked to do so much. And I've encountered some police who are simply burned out. There's a poll out today. I just saw it, that three out of every 10 healthcare workers are leaving the profession because they're burned out or they want to do so. I think we make enormous demands on our police. We need to support them. Qualified immunity is part of the picture, but it's only one part of it. And I'd be interested in knowing what the statistics are as opposed to the anecdotal stories that people may have.
Senator Blumenthal, we appreciate getting your feedback on this morning. And I know we'll be talking to you tomorrow morning for our special one-hour event for L'Ambiance Plaza anniversary. So I look forward to talking to you again tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would just emphasize, Melissa, that accountability is important in every profession, and especially so when there is law enforcement involved. And I believe strongly that demanding the highest standards of our police is something we need to do. So thanks for raising these issues.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for talking to us about it this morning. So if you own a home, you may have already gotten a lot of offers, especially during the pandemic, or seen advertisements about buying it quickly and getting cash in return. As you know, selling a home is a very time-consuming process. I know because I have moved a total of 7 times since being married to my husband. We haven't even been married 5 years, so that just gives you a little reference point there. It's a headache. So to give us some perspective, especially because a lot of people are jumping on the let me sell my home train right now in Connecticut, to give us some perspective on how to do this properly, we have Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau here this morning. So, Luke, you have some recommendations to make sure that people find the right kind of buyer and they avoid getting scammed. What would you say is the first thing you would recommend to potential sellers?
Sure. So if you have a home, you're thinking about selling your home, yes, it's potentially a great time to put it on the market. However, if you do have to buy a home, also keep in mind, you know, home prices are pretty high right now. So if you have to buy, you may also pay a high price to get a new home as well. So keep that in mind. And then there's really two options to selling your home. Obviously, is either having an agent or doing it privately, or if you get those postcards in the mail saying we buy homes for cash, you know, I'm an investor, you know, and we call them opportunity investors, people who just buy your home sight unseen, no home inspection, XYZ. And a lot of people ask questions, you know, is that a scam? Can I do that? And there are people called opportunity investors who do buy your home. But there's a few things you have to keep in mind. Mm-hmm. So think about your time constraints. So escrow can kind of be a long time when it comes to having mortgages approved and all of these different moving parts when it comes to having your home on the market. And a lot of time these investors either pay cash or it's a lot shorter time frame than actually having it on the market and having, you know, some other agent with clients buying your home. So it could be a quicker process. Mm-hmm. However, also keeping in mind, how much profit do you need to make on your home? Is it a, you know, pretty updated home? Could it go for a great price? You know, these home investors don't necessarily pay top price either.
Right.
So usually they're trying to, you know, conduct a quick sale and pay as little as possible in order to get your home.
Aren't these usually like home flippers?
Yeah, I would say most of the time I don't know 100%, but usually these are people I would say that buy homes that either need updated or have some issues. And if you have a home like that, you usually want to sell it without a home inspection and, you know, not go through all of those hoops. So if you have a home like that, if you inherited a home, if a person in your family possibly passed away, and it's something you don't necessarily want to put time and effort into in order to update or do small changes in order to get top dollar, a home investor may be a good option.
Okay. But now, Luke Fry of the Better Business Bureau, how do you make sure you're not falling victim to a home investor scam?
Yeah, so you really have to be careful about scams because there are scams when it comes to these home investors. So always, you know, turn to us, come to BBB.org, search, make sure it's a legitimate company or person who is about to buy your home, and always, you know, make that transaction through a bank, through a brokerage. Some of these investors try to kind of do it all off the table and claim that they're going to pay you cash and just hand you a check, really to keep things off the books, and in a sense to protect yourself and to protect this transaction so you aren't scammed. You always want to go through some sort of brokerage just to do that large transaction, because a home is not just $100 or $1,000. Yeah. It's usually a lot more than that.
Well, I was just going to say, Luke Fry, that, you know, it's interesting that I understand, you know, you see the dollar signs, right? I mean, we have been hearing that Connecticut, I mean, we can't keep properties on the market more than even 24 hours. And most of these properties are going above asking price, you know. We've seen that, especially in the last year. But to me, it's fascinating to see how quickly, even if you had no plans to sell your property, people are just putting them up for sale. And some, it's like, okay, maybe this was the push you needed. Like, maybe you've been considering, I don't know if I want to live in Connecticut anymore or whatever. But to me, I think to myself, wow, this is the most expensive thing that most people invest in. And I find that, you know, to like get that quick buck, you may not get that quick buck. You may lose all your bucks. I just think it's interesting how we're seeing that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it could turn into one of two things. If you use one of these investors and it ends up being a scam, you could be out a lot of money. But also, you know, people who were just listing their homes to just put them on the market and see how much they can get. You know, I like to remind people, if you're still moving to Connecticut or any popular area right now, you're also going to pay top dollar. So really, are you making what you think you're going to make?
That's so true.
In your home, if you have to buy a property that's also inflated in price. So, you know, keep these things in mind. There was a house around the corner from our home that sold literally in one day. They said they had 11 showings in one day, and then it sold in under a week. And that's just, you know, it's wild right
now.
Yeah,
it is. It is wild. But you make a really good point. Like, I feel like unless you're going to Florida, where literally like the home prices are just astronomically lower than Connecticut, you know, if you're staying in the Northeast, you're going to still pay top dollar in Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts. Like, you're still going to pay top dollar. That's so true. Now, Luke Fry, really quick before I let you go, if you are not selling to an investor, talk about the importance of factoring in prep work for your home.
Yeah. So if you are going to put your house on the market, typically agents or even yourself too, you want top dollar for your home. So even though houses are kind of going for top dollar now, there are usually just small things you should do in your home, you know, possibly painting or just doing some small jobs around the house that actually can be costly. So if you are going to put your home up on the market, you know, keep in mind there are going to be expenses on your end, even though you're the person who's selling your home. There could be an issue in the home inspection. And again, I was talking about painting and small upgrades that do come out of your pocket. However, it will help that resale value as well.
Yeah, it's very true. Now, Luke Fry, if anybody does want to get more of these resources, tips from the Better Business Bureau, where can they go?
Yes, anybody can go to BBB.org or our BBB.org/news to read any of these top trending articles right now.
Luke, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Yeah, it was great talking to you.
Yeah, same with you. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. You have been hearing me talk about it all morning, my obsession with planet Earth. I love Earth Day, 365 days a year, but this is the one day a year where I could just splurge and talk about planet Earth all morning long. And I'm not going to stop. So today, right now, we're talking to Helen Lohman. She has been on the show before, the president and CEO of Keep America Beautiful. And Helen, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad to be back. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. Now, Helen, the last time you and I spoke, I might be wrong, but the last time we talked, there were cleanup efforts obviously going on across our area in Connecticut, but it was a little tricky because with the pandemic, you know, we saw a lot of people discarding masks and gloves, but we also were worried about contracting COVID and contamination. So I know your cleanup is underway right now. What does that look like? How can people get involved?
Great question. And yeah, we have made a lot of progress throughout 2020 in developing some best practices in how we can continue to get out and clean up and beautify our communities and still stay safe. And, you know, that includes wearing masks, social distancing, but, you know, and wearing gloves and that kind of thing. But you know what? We found out that we can do it and keep our volunteers safe. And so we have moved forward with the Great American Cleanup, which is happening right now. And, in you know, to support Earth Day, we really want to ask people to get out, pick up litter. You know, we talked about the last time, I think you and I talked about the increase of PPE litter. So the masks, the gloves. The wipes that we're seeing all over the United States. And, you know, want to encourage people to put these things in the trash. Ideally, we don't have to do cleanups, right? Ideally,
right.
Everything goes in the trash. But you're right. We want to protect planet Earth, and we want to make sure that all the litter stays off the ground and out of the water and goes in the trash can.
You know, I have to say, Helen, and I don't know if I'm out of turn saying this, I'm not condoning whatsoever the PPE littering that we saw in the beginning of the pandemic by any stretch of the imagination. But okay, so it was new to people. They are wearing masks and gloves. They're coming out of the grocery store. They don't know if they want to bring it into their cars, so they dump it. They leave it in their carts, whatever the case may be. Again, not condoning it. But I mean, it's been like a year and a half. And is it, this is still a huge issue that people literally can't just walk 10 more feet and put it in the trash? Like, we're still seeing that in our neighborhoods?
We are.
That's ridiculous. I just think that's crazy.
It's really crazy. I agree with you. But, I mean, you know, I think it's just a new kind of litter. The fact is we've been around since 1953 picking up litter and trying to prevent litter and trying to educate people how to make sure that there's no litter. And the fact is there's still litter. And even if we picked up every piece of litter in the United States, today, because it's Earth Day, let's say we were able to do that, there would be more tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just that it's a new and different kind of litter.
So I'm scared to ask this, but I'm going to do it because I think we need facts sometimes. So Helen Lohman, tell me this. In all the years that Keep America Beautiful has been around, you guys have seen a lot, an awful lot. What would you say are still some of the biggest perpetrators? Like, what are still some of the biggest things killing our earth right now?
Well, in terms of litter, I mean, the kind of things we're seeing are, I mean, the biggest, first of all, let me say there is good news. I do want to start with good news. It's Earth Day. We're celebrating the earth. So the good news is what we've seen is, you know, in the last 10 years, there's actually been a massive decrease in litter. That's great. Yeah, it's really good news. You know, we've seen actually a 54% decrease in litter along roadways from 2009 to the research we did last year. So, yay, Americans are doing a great job.
Good.
The bad news is that we still have 50 billion pieces of litter in America right now on the ground, along our roadways, and along our waterways. And those are the pieces that, you know, we want to prevent. We want to keep doing better, educating people not to litter. We want to ask people to pick up the litter that's out there. You know, if you take that $50 billion and you divide it by the number of people in the United States, if every person in the United States picked up 152 pieces of litter today, we would not have any more litter in America. At least
that's
for the
crazy.
Time being.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it would get out there again. But it makes it possible.
Yeah, it's definitely doable. Now, here's my question, Helen. Is it just that people are careless, or is it the fact that there are people who will, for example, put things in their trash bins and our landfills are filling up incredibly quickly? You know, like, is it just as simply as like, hey, we're just not being, you know, more mindful in putting things in the right place? Or is it the fact that we are living on a planet where our landfills are also filling up incredibly fast?
Mostly, littering itself, the act of littering, is a human act.
Okay.
So some of it, I mean, admittedly, some litter out there is accidental.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But littering is actually a human act. And so the important thing is that, you know, we are sure to tell people how to appropriately dispose of their waste. And that's part of the reason why we focus our education on recycling,
mm-hmm.
because we do want people to recycle everything that they possibly can recycle and reduce the amount of waste they're using. You know, with the masks, let's think about the masks. You know, using a reusable mask that you can put in the washer, and rather than buying these single-use masks, is, you know, a much more environmentally friendly way of doing it.
It sounds crazy, but it's also cuter. Like, I've gotten really into the reusable masks. I get Disney masks and everything. And you're supporting local. Like, they're all local shops that make them. And they're comfier for your face. And I don't know. I've never been into the like, disposable masks. I understand for people who especially need it for, like, frontline work. I get that. But, yeah, I mean, to me, the reusable, why not do that? I think that's a great idea. Now,
I completely agree.
Right? I mean, come on. I mean, at least look cute if you got to wear them, right? So,
right?
Helen Lohman, really quick, what is your website? If people want to learn more, they want to get involved, where do they go?
Our website is kab.org. And just, you know, people can go there. They can sign up to volunteer on our portal. And right now we're actually mailing out a free cleanup kit to anyone who signs up.
Awesome.
And that cleanup kit includes a litter picker and gloves and a safety vest and all sorts of stuff to help them do litter pickups at their own house.
I love that. Helen Lohman, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. And thank everyone for listening this morning on this Earth Day. We'll be back tomorrow morning.